Okay, I hope you can hear me at the back.
Thoughts that come to mind of braving the weather, but given recent events elsewhere in the world, that has taken on new dimensions. But in the meanwhile, we hope only for Gishmi Brocha. And we find ourselves at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, after Moshe's first mission to Paro, which seemingly ended badly. Things got worse for Bnei Yisrael. And the beginning of Parshas Va'era, although we would put the opening sukkim together as some form of preamble to a message of Geula, but if we prize them apart and begin at the beginning, Vayidaber Elokim al Moshe, Vayomer Elav, Ani Hashem. And if we stop here, we need to ask what exactly has happened in this opening pasuk. We normally don't stop here. It's just the beginning to other messages, but it sounds like something has already happened. The first thing Hashem told Moshe is Ani Hashem. Is that a chidush? What is its role in terms of the events as they are? Specifically as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words are a response to a complaint on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the first meeting with Paro seems to have backfired, things have gotten harder. U'me'az basi al Paro l'dabe v'shmecha heira la'amazeh. Things only got worse. V'hatzel lo etzalta samecha. And Moshe, as the Mefarshim explained, is not complaining, so to speak, that the Geula hasn't happened in its entirety yet, but it doesn't seem to have happened at all. Things only got worse. They didn't even begin to move in the right direction. That is the end of Parshas Shemos. Why have things gone so terribly wrong? We seem to have gotten off on the wrong foot. The opening pasuk of Va'era is a response to that, which means when Hashem says, Ani Hashem, that is a response to why things have gone badly. And we need to understand, how is that so? How does it relate to the situation as Moshe was concerned with? Moreover, Pasuk Vav reiterates this refrain, so to speak. Lachain, the introduction to the famous Arba Lashonos of Geula, the four Geulos, Lachain, Emor Levnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem, which means that before we get to the following words, which are Vahotzeisi, Vihitzalti, or more correctly, Vahotzeisi, Vihitzalti, etc., we have the word Lachain. Now, the word Lachain has a very specific translation. It means therefore. And when you say therefore, you are saying that what is about to happen is based on the above. Because of A, therefore B. Somehow, therefore, the Geula, as it is forecast, is based on the above. But the question is how? In other words, the Jewish people were always heading for Geula. How is whatever has been said in the opening Sukkim of Va'era the basis of Geula? How can those messages be said to be the launch for Lachain? Based on what was said above, the Jewish people will be redeemed. The message of Geula has already come in the in last week's Parsha. Now, upsettingly, in Pasuk Tes, as Moshe comes with the famous Arba Lashonos of Geula, the Bnei Yisrael aren't listening. Vayidaber Moshe Keno Bnei Yisrael, he faithfully conveys Vohotzeisi, Vitzalti, Vigo'alti, Vilokakti, and they're not listening. It doesn't stop us drinking four cups of wine on Seder night, if you know what I mean. But the first time these messages were heard, they weren't heard. Velo Shomuel Moshe. Why not? Why were they not listening? Mikotze Ruach Umeavoda Kosha. Because of their difficulties, shortness of spirit, hard work. And if we would ask at this juncture, she'elas tam, if you pardon the expression, what is it that that caused the Bnei Yisrael not to hear Moshe's words? The pasuk says, kotza ruach, avoda kosher. They had all that already. In other words, the first time round, it seems the Bnei Yisrael were receptive to the idea of Geula. Vayamein ha'am, vayishma ki pokad Hashem es Bnei Yisrael. So they were open to the idea. And now, they're not open to the idea anymore. Why? Says the pasuk, mikotza ruach, umeavoda kosher. And our question is, well, they had that the first time, and they did listen. So how can that be the very same factor, be a cause for them shifting their policy and not to listen anymore? The simple answer, presumably, is well, they listened the first time because, like Moshe Rabbeinu, they thought things would get better. When things got worse, so they're no longer listening anymore. But although that's the simple answer to this question, one almost needs to add in a word of subtext, because when the Torah says they didn't listen because of kotza ruach and avodah kosher, it's true that they had those things originally, but they have more of it now. Me'avodah yoser kosher, because avodah kosher they always had. So to identify these things in abstract as the reason for their not listening, where they existed before, but rather the meaning is more of what they used to have, but the pasuk doesn't talk about more. It just talks about these two conditions themselves, kotza ruach, me'avodah kosher. What exactly are those things, and why are they present now, and why do they become an impediment now, whereas they were not originally? And Pasuk Yud, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor, Bo Daber al Paramelech Mitzrayim, Vishalach es Bnei Yisrael Mei Artzo. Go speak to Bnei Yisrael, let him release Bnei Yisrael, let him send them out. And here Moshe responds, Vayidaber Moshe Lefnei Hashem Lemor. Vayidaber, that's Loshon Kosher. It's a very heated discussion, even on Moshe's part. Hein Bnei Yisrael lo shamu elai. The Bnei Yisrael, they haven't listened to me. Ve'eichish ma'eni paro, how can paro listen to me? Varaniyar osfasayim, right? I have difficulty speaking. Now, these words of Moshe are famous because they're on a list of Kal v'chomers. Rashi tells us there are 10 Kal v'chomers in the Torah, and this is one of them. Kal v'chomer means if in the milder case there is a problem, Kal v'chomer all the more so in the harsher case. And so too, says Moshe, responding with a Kal v'chomer. Apparently, that was of the essence. If the Bnei Yisrael haven't listened to me, so Kal v'chomer, Paro would listen to me. That's the way the argument is put forth. And interestingly, many Mefarshim get very engaged in this Kal v'chomer, because as soon as you mention the concept of a Kal v'chomer, so we need to know Kal v'chomer has rules. And moreover, a Kal v'chomer can be broken. And the way that that works is, if the way a Kal v'chomer is set up is, if conditions exist for the milder case, how much more so for the chomer case, that's a good Kal v'chomer. It's a bona fide Kal v'chomer. Unless you can identify a possible cause that exists in the milder case, that does not exist in the harsher case, in which case it may well be attributable to that factor within the mild case, which does not exist in the more chomer case, in which case you have no kal v'chomer. And if that sounds rather abstract, let us put names to faces. What that means is, Moshe is saying, the Bnei Yisrael are not listening to me, so certainly Paro won't listen to me. Except the Torah tells us why the Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to Moshe. Kotze ruach and avoda kosha. Life is hard for them. They're under an unbearably difficult workload. That's what stopped them from hearing the message. Paro doesn't have that. Paro has his own issues, that is true, but he doesn't have this. And the extent to which this factor is identified by the Torah as the reason why the Jewish people didn't listen, and absent from Paro, so it is not a smooth Kal v'chomer, because it may well be that Bnei Yisrael are not the Kal. They have avodah kosher. That's why they didn't listen. Paro doesn't have avodah kosher. He just has serious other issues. But maybe he'll listen, if that's what it's all. If it broke over avodah kosher, and Paro doesn't have avodah kosher, so there's no Kal v'chomer, which is very disappointing, because this is one of the 10 Kal v'chomers of the Torah. So, these are very interesting questions for psukim that we normally I would say, glide through on the way to the Esser Makos. And the Be'er Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant, explains that in order to get some type of insight into what is happening here, it's a pivotal time, the beginning of Parshas Va'era, we need to be aware of an aspect of the Jewish people's experience, the Jewish people's experience in Mitzrayim, that we don't often speak about. I think we feel they had enough tzaras and therefore we don't wish to bring this up, but if we don't, we will miss much of the dynamics of what is happening in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we begin with the opening words of the Parsha. Vayidaber Elokim al Moshe, Vayomer Elav, Ani Hashem. And our question was, is that a chiddush? Is that news? What is the meaning of saying Ani Hashem? Well, no better time to consult Seder night than when we're learning the Parshas at the beginning of Shemos. We know that there is a very specific emphasis and very specific inference attached to the phrase Ani Hashem, as indeed when it says Va'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim, Be'ikesi go b'chor, etc. Ani v'lo malach, ani v'lo sarach. Ani Hashem means Ani v'lo acher. The emphasis of Ani Hashem is Ani v'lo acher. There is no other. The question is, what does that have to do with us? And the answer, unfortunately, is a great deal. It begins with the Michilta, or more correctly, we will begin with the Michilta, whereby at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, where for us, the Jewish people, they go through blissfully on their way, and the Mitzrayim, of course, race into their doom, but according to Chazal, it was not such a smooth trail for Bnei Yisrael, for a simple reason. The Satan comes at that time and says, not nice to say, but that's his job, Halalu Ovde Avodah Zorah, V'Halalu Ovde Avodah Zorah. The Satan is saying, what's the difference between them? Ad Kedei Kach. The Jewish people, unfortunately, had been influenced by the surroundings, by the Egyptian culture, atmosphere, etc., and they became very attached to Avodah Zorah. This is stated as a comment on the words in Parshas Baruch Hanan, which describe Yetzias Mitzrayim as Goy Mikerev Goy. Which, if we sanitize it, means one nation from another, but the Sifrei says Goy Mikerev Goy means that they were almost indistinguishable one from the other. Ad Kedei Kach. Leaving aside the issues of Lashonam and Shemam, etc., etc., but in terms of some of their habits, Goy Mikerev Goy. Those are very harsh words. And the truth of the matter is, this does not begin not with the Mechilta and not with the Sifrei. It begins with the Nevi'im. Because there is a certain section in the Navi Yechezkel, in Perek Kaf, where he actually talks about Golas Mitzrayim and Nevuah that was sent to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Originally by Aaron, actually. Aaron gave Nevuah in Mitzrayim before Moshe did. And this is black on white in the Navi Yechezkel, Perek Kaf, Pasuk Zion, says as follows. Va'omar aleihem, I said to them, Ish shikutzei einov hashlichu, everyone should cast aside their shkutzim, v'gilulei Mitzrayim al titamo'u, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, do not defile yourselves with gilulei Mitzrayim, with the idol worship of Mitzrayim. And that was the message. And unfortunately, as we saw from the Mechilta, that message, to a significant degree, we can't quantify from this distance, but to a significant degree, was unheeded. And that is also referred to in the Navi, which continues and says, Vayamrubi. But they rebelled. This is the Jewish people. They were given a message to relinquish and get rid of their Avodah Zorah. Velo avu lishmoa elai. They didn't want to listen. Ish eshikutzei einehem lo ishlichu. Vezgiluli Mitzrayim lo osvu. So they didn't want to do it. Now, if that's the case, then a true appraisal of the situation of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim is that life is difficult for them, but there's one bonus. And that is, when they're in Mitzrayim, they can partake of the Avodah Zorah in Mitzrayim. And from a certain point of view, the sad situation of Bnei Yisrael at that stage or at least what was the widespread notion, is life is hard, but it's worth it. It's difficult, but we can buy into the Avodah Zarah culture here. And of course, as we know, the whole pull towards Avodah Zarah in those days is impossible for us to fathom. The Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah was removed at the time of the Bayis Sheni, and anything prior to that for us is a mystery. But one could argue there are new Avodah Zarahs that are equally as baffling, that have everyone running after them. But the original Avodah Zarah for the Jewish people, it was very difficult. And says the Be'er Yosef, now we understand that something cathartic has to happen. There has to be a watershed experience for the Jewish people. If currently the balance of events is that life is difficult in Mitzrayim, but we can bear it, and it's worth it, because we get the Avodah Zarah. So actually what has to happen in order for them to be released is life needs to become unbearable. The part that the Jewish people need to provide is to be able to say it is no longer worth it. Even Avodah Zarah, to put those words into their mouth, is not worth conditions as they are in Mitzrayim, and we're not interested anymore. And what's interesting is, because there is no question, that a condition precedent to leaving Mitzrayim for the Jewish people is to relinquish the Avodah Zarah on a fundamental level. And that's what Korban Pesach is all about, etc. and so forth. And therefore, if the situation currently is, life is difficult, but we can bear it, what has to happen before there can be any move out of Mitzrayim is life needs to become unbearable. That means the Jewish people need to reach a point where they say, we would prefer to leave and leave the Avodah Zarah behind than stay here with things being what they are. And in fact, the Hasidim say, I think it's with the Rebbe Rabbunim, that when the first Loshon of Vahutseisi Eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, I'll take you out from the burdens of Mitzrayim. So sivlos is a burden because you bear it. When something is bearable, that's called savil, even lahavdil in Hebrew, modern Hebrew. Savil, lisbol means savlanut. A person can bear it. And the first thing, that the breakthrough moment for the Jewish people is when they have to be taken out from being able to bear it. They're in a situation of sivlos Mitzrayim. Sovlim. We bear it. It's tough, but we bear it. It's worth it. They have to be removed from that mindset, that they can no longer bear it. And from that point of view, things actually do need to get worse for them to get better. And therefore, Moshe's question was, Lama Hari Osalam Hazeh? Why did life get so difficult for Bnei Yisrael? And that's how Shemos ends. The era begins with two words which essentially say it all. Hashem says to Moshe, Ani Hashem. And Ani Hashem, the full print of Ani Hashem, means Ani Velo Acher. That's what it's all about. Currently, they have Acher on their menu. And that's why life, that is the answer to your question. That's why things need to get more difficult, because the Acher needs to disappear. And therefore, from a certain point of view, when Moshe comes back to Bnei Yisrael with the second message of Geula, it's a slightly more sobering message than the first one. The first message was very simply, redemption is nigh, with no strings attached, and so who wouldn't like redemption? But by the time things have gotten more difficult, that means the program of Geula has begun. The message for Bnei Yisrael is now based on Ani Hashem. It is now conditional. And therefore, the first thing, Lachain, based on this discussion, go and say that now to Bnei Yisrael. And it is a consequence and a corollary of these recent developments. Because the first one was, Hashem has heard your anguish, and he's going to take you out. But based on what is happening now, is Lachain, on this basis, tell the Bnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem. And they need to accept that, and they need to relinquish anything else that is an impediment to that. As the Pasuk says, V'idatem ki ani Hashem Elokeichem ha-motzi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. So, the message that Moshe comes, based on this analysis with the Bnei Yisrael, the Arba Lashonos of Geula are, you will be redeemed, but there is one thing that you need to give up, that's the Avodah Zarah. That's why things have gotten tough. Are you prepared? Well, the Pasuk says, Pasuk Tes, Vayidaber Moshe Kein al Bnei Yisrael. Moshe said all of this to Bnei Yisrael. Velo Shamu al Moshe. And they didn't hear. Why? Mikotzer Ruach is easy to translate, or easy to understand what it means. Kotzer Ruach, right there, the short temper, short patience. Umi Avoda Kosha, hard work. Sometimes Chazal say things, if they hadn't said it, we would never have dreamt it. What is Avoda Kosha? Says the Mechilta, Zo Avoda Zora, Shekosha Liparid Mimena. Avoda Kosha. There was a hard avodah here. It was hard for them to distance themselves for avodah zara, and therefore, if that was the price, they weren't hearing it. And that means that things really did need to get worse until the Bnei Yisrael fundamentally were able to say it's not worth it, even for whatever avodah zara there is in here. That is why, when Hashem says to Moshe, "Go and tell Paro to release the Bnei Yisrael," Moshe makes a kal vachomer. The Jewish people didn't listen to me. How will Paro listen to me? And our question was, or the question of the Mefarshim is, there's a reason why the Jewish people didn't listen to him. Because they had Avodah Kosha. Paro doesn't have Avodah Kosha, says the Ber Yosef. Yes, he does. Paro is the supplier of Avodah Kosha. If according to the Mechilta, Avodah Kosha is Avodah Zara. So they already, they're prepared to put up with a life of slavery in order to stay attached to Avodah Zara. So Paro, who's the purveyor of Avodah Zara, lives a life of luxury. So why on earth should he listen to me to let them go? And that's the Kal Vachomer. So these are some of the rather harsher aspects of what is happening Erev Yetzias Mitzrayim. But of course, if Chazal speak about it, and if the Navi speaks about it, then any meaningful discussion of, the full discussion of Yetzias Mitzrayim, cannot take place without it. And this is the analysis of the Ber Yosef in the beginning of Parshas Va'era. Now, the first confrontation of Va'era is where Moshe is to present certain signs to Paro. Paro will say, "Tenu lachem oso mofes." That's in Perek Zion, Pasuk Ches. Vayomer Hashem Moshe vel Aaron lemor. Ki daber aleichem Paro lemor. When Paro speaks to you and says, "Tenu lachem mofes," he says, "Present a sign for yourselves." Vamarta el Aaron kaches matcha vashlech neflei Paro yehi lesanin. Tell Aaron, he'll throw his staff down in front of Paro, it will become a tanin. What's a tanin? We've discussed in recent years whether a tanin is the snake itself, or is it a crocodile. Rashi says it's a nachash. Unklus gives a different translation both times. For a snake it's a chivya, and for tanin it's tanina. And Rishonim and Achronim discuss this point at length. Even if it's a crocodile, it's certainly the same mishpacha. In other words, we're talking about certainly the same idea. There is yet distinctions and subdivisions within them, but largely it's certainly heading in that direction. And what happens? Pasuk Yud, Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron al Paro, Vayasu ken kasher tziva Hashem, Vayashleich Aaron es Mateu, and Aaron threw his staff down, Lefnei Paro, Lefnei Avadov, Vayila Tanin, and it became a Tanin. And Paro also did the same thing, and then Aaron's staff swallowed up all of their stuff. And that was Adkan, the first meeting, more or less. And Paro's heart was hardened, and he's not interested, and he's not listening. And again, the Ber Yosef raises a question. What is the goal of this first meeting? What is the meaning behind this first sign? We may have been inclined to say that the sign is that they represent this higher power, and therefore, they can have their staff turn into a tanin. Except that loses some of its edge when the Chartumim are also able to do it after a fashion. It's not the real thing. And they all went home staffless at the end of the day. It's quite true. But if we're not really reading the small print and just the occasion itself, it doesn't seem like a decisive victory. It doesn't seem like a categorical issue. It's not like Kinim, that they tried and they couldn't do it. They tried and they did it. And in the end, it didn't work out for them so well. But they were able, to a certain degree, to at least mimic it. So then what's the point of the sign? If you have an attention span of just a few seconds, which many people do for things that interest them, so then the enduring impression is that Moshe did it and Paro did it. And if you didn't read any further, you wouldn't know that in the end, Moshe and Aaron won. But so the Be'er Yosef explains that actually the Mofes here, the sign, Mofes in a sense is a proof for something. Os, Mofes. It's actually a message with ramifications for the entire year to come. This in a sense is the prelude. This is the prologue to the Eser Makos. The next time they will meet, it will be Makos. Which means, in a sense, this is the introduction to all of that. And from a certain point of view, what is about to happen here is an introduction to the Eser Makos. And how? And why? One of the classic questions of the Rishonim, there are many philosophical, theological issues with regards to Golas Mitzrayim and the Geula from Mitzrayim, specifically with the way that the Mitzrayim were punished. And there are many questions, the questions of free will, and questions of things that are forecast, can they change things, it's already been determined, it's already been told over, etc. and so forth. And all of these are very knotty questions. But one of the questions is, from a completely different angle, leaving aside the question of free will, from a certain point of view, one could say that the Mitzrayim shouldn't be punished for the simple reason that they are carrying out God's will. After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem, va'avodim ve'inu osam arba me'er shana. Whoever, now that's obviously going to happen through some nation, whichever nation steps forward, one could say, one would need to understand why it is not the case, that they are actually fulfilling God's will. Why is that not so? So some say that the concept of Megalglin Chova Idei Chayav, that no one has to be that nation, and whoever is that nation is a problematic nation, and no one should have volunteered. But the question remains, for according to some Rishonim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it will happen, and therefore whoever makes it happen is fulfilling God's will. Not all of God's will is pleasant. Sometimes harsh things have to happen, and they step forward. And the Ramban deals with this question in Parshas Lech Lecha in the Bris Menorah B'Sarim, where he raises the question, he quotes the Rambam and others. And the response of the Ramban, which is an important position to know on this question, is, in fact, he concedes the point. That is to say, he accepts the premise behind the question. The premise is that if they're doing God's will, they should not be punished. Says Ramban, that's correct. So then why are they punished? Says Ramban, because they exceeded their mandate. They went above and beyond what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said would happen. Hashem said, Va'avodim ve'inu osam, and that sounds bad enough. But, says Ramban, as we know, the program of aggression of the Egyptians against Bnei Yisrael went beyond that, and they started killing them, kol ben hayilod, hayo'ora tashlichu, and that's got nothing to do with Vavod of Inu or so many more. That is in excess of that. So it is not a carte blanche. They have a certain profile, a certain mandate called Vavod of Inu or some. Says Ramban, had they stayed within it, they would not have been punished. But they went way beyond. And in fact, says Ramban, that is the meaning in the Bris Ben Abisarim of Vegames Hagoy Asher Yavodu Don Anochi. I will judge that nation. So we normally take judgment as a watchword for punish, because they're obviously going to be punished. So Don Anochi just means I'll judge them and punish them. But says Ramban, no, there is a judgment. And it could go either way. The judgment is, have they stayed within the boundaries of Avodim Ve'inu Osam? And if the answer is yes, then they will be vindicated in their judgment. But if the answer is no, then they'll be punished. So done means what it sounds like it means. They will be judged. There will be a judgment, and there will be a reckoning and a determination as to whether they are in violation of having gone beyond the bounds of what they were licensed to do. And moreover, says Ramban, this is a concept that will be echoed later on in the Tanakh in the case of Sancheriv. Sancheriv actually had two points of contact with the Jewish people. Firstly, he was the one that sent the 10 tribes into exile. That's Ashur, sent them into Golus. And says the Ramban, if you read the Navi Yeshaya, you will see that that was something that was forecast that would happen, and he is never punished for doing that. The downfall of Sanherib is when he got a little bit too ambitious, beyond the scope of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had empowered him to do against Bnei Yisrael, namely when he set his sights southwards from Malchus Yehuda and laid siege on Yerushalayim, and that was something that he was not in any way mandated to do or empowered to do, and that was his downfall, and that's where he died. That's where his army was destroyed. And with regards to the earlier episode of the 10 tribes, the Pasuk says, it's the Navi Yeshaya Perek Yud, Hoy Ashur Shevet Api. Behold, Ashur Shevet Api is the rod of my wrath. Umatehu Biadam Za'ami. He is the staff of my anger, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does that mean? That means that for a nation to be considered a staff in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand, that means that essentially at that stage he's doing Hashem's will. And he was not punished for that. The problem is, within the fullness of time, he then began to do things that Hashem did not allow him to do. And at that point, he's no longer a staff within HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand. Says the Be'er Yosef, Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele, when we consider now the implications of this first meeting with Paro, Tenu Lachem Osu Mofes, prove yourself. Prove yourselves, meaning establish your credentials for what you're about to forecast. You say, I'm going to be punished. Why should I be punished? God said that they were to be persecuted. So what is the answer to that? The answer is, Moshe says to Aaron, take a staff and turn it into a tanin, crocodile/snake, because that is the reason why Paro is being punished, because at a certain point he stopped being a staff and started to become a snake. The snake represents, and this is a throwback now, the first time we meet the Nachash, is he is the alternative agenda to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans. That's his characteristic. And therefore, snake versus staff means were you following your own plans or following HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans? And the extent to which the staff turned into a snake is the answer. That's the mofes, and therefore there is no defense for Paro's acts of aggressions, and the Makos will follow. So this is a very fascinating insight of the Be'er Yosef into this opening round, which is not yet a Makos, but it's something, and it actually is the prelude to all of the Makos. Now, when we come to consider the Makos themselves, 7 of the 10 are in this week's Parsha, the last 3 in Parsha's Bo, and if we ask again a simple question, what were they for? Now, there is more than one answer to this question, because, shall we say, it is in order to release the Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim, the Egyptians were punished until they let the Bnei Yisrael go. But, of course, one doesn't need 10 Makos in order to do that. One will suffice, and it just won't stop until they let the Bnei Yisrael go. Is it to punish the Mitzrayim? Yes, as per above. But moreover, and in a sense, this will bring us back to the state that Mitzrayim had brought Bnei Yisrael to, where they'd lost a sense of connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they lost an appreciation of Ani Hashem, and they sought there to give their allegiance elsewhere, Avodah Kosha, Avodah Zorah, and therefore, and behind all of that is Mitzrayim, whether it was a natural byproduct of just living in Mitzrayim, or whether it was a conscious effort on the part of Mitzrayim in order to assimilate them and to affect them, That is a question that's discussed in the Meforshim. But nonetheless, one thing is for sure, the Jewish people need to be re-educated in terms of Ani Hashem, Laman Teida, and those that are to pay for their education are Mitzrayim. And therefore they actually become the stage for everything that is about to come. It is as much for Bnei Yisrael to attain an appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as it is for the Mitzrayim to be punished. Rav Shlomo Kluger says, Al Derech Hadrush, in his Perush to Pirkei Avos, where it says, Asara nisim nasu l'avoseinu be'eretz Mitzrayim. 10 miracles happened to our fathers in Mitzrayim. That's the pshat, and that will remain the pshat. But Rav Shlomo Kluger says, the concept of an av is a teacher. That's why Pirkei Avos, it's moral instruction. Shema b'ni, Shlomo HaMelech always says to his students, Shema B'ni. And whoever a person learns from becomes like their father. A person can learn from another person. A person can learn from an event. The ten Makos were ten experiences that taught the Jewish people. And therefore they became like their fathers. Asara Nisim Nasul Avoseinu, because those Eser Makos happened to the Mitzrayim, so those ten miracles of the Jewish people witnessing this and being spared themselves, Nasul Avoseinu, so they became like our fathers in Mitzrayim. They were our educators. We were in school for a year, the school of learning about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by watching what happens to the Mitzrayim and what doesn't happen to us. Now, based on this, the Maharal takes this idea and will give a very all-encompassing presentation of the Eser Makos. And it's based on the idea that if we say that the Ten Makos are as much to educate B'nai Yisrael about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the creator and ruler of the world, so then we will understand why there were Ten Makos. Because the world was created in 10 stages. As we say again in Pirkei Avos, Perikei, Ba'asara Ma'amoros, Nivra Ha'olam. The world is created with 10 sayings, 10 statements, so to speak, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And, says the Maharal, if we track the Makos, we will see that there exists a parallel between each one of the Makos and one of the Ma'asara Ma'amoros, Shebahem, Nivra Ha'olam. Now, the order is not the same because the Makos have their own internal circuitry. But each one will find its partner, and the Maharal proceeds to explain how this is the case. This is in the Sefer Gevuras Hashem. We will see that for some of the connections it's a straight line, for some of them it's somewhat more indirect. Nonetheless, by the time we're finished, 10 equals 10. Number one, Makas Dam. What does that correspond to? Which of the Ma'amoros? Says Maharal, there's an interesting shaila actually as to which was the last of the 10 Ma'amoros. Which was number 10? According to many Mefarshim, and the Maharal concurs, it is actually the end of Perek Aleph where it says, Vayomer Elokim, Hine nosati lechem es kol eisev asodeh lechem yeh la'ochla. Hashem gives the vegetation of the field, etc., to Adam and Chava to eat. Now, what's interesting is, it sounds like he's giving them permission. So it doesn't really sound like an act of creation per se. He's saying that this is acceptable for you. But the Maharal and others, Vilna Gaon also concurs, says no. Because actually, here you have Adam and Chava, they're human beings, they need to live. Where will their life come from? It's going to come from the grass. How can that be? From vegetation, from the fruits and vegetables, etc. How does life come from that matter and become converted into energy that will sustain them? Says Maharal, that was the final Ma'amar. The final Ma'amar was the creation of the capacity for living beings to continue living based on consuming other materials, because A doesn't intuitively lead to B. And moreover, the fusing point of those two, where matter becomes life, exists within the bloodstream. Ki adam hu anefesh. The blood is where all of the life force from the food becomes part of the life force of the person. And therefore, makas dam corresponds to, the first of the makas corresponds to the last of the ma'amoros. Maka number two, svardeya. Needs very little introduction. On the third day, Bereishis Perek Aleph Pasuk Kaf, Yishritzu Hamayim Sheretz Nefesh Chaya. Let the water sprout forth living things. Well, that is basically what happened in Makas Tzvardeya. Number three, what about Kinim? Well, in Pasuk Tes of Perek Aleph of Bereishis, on Monday, Yikavu hamayim mitachas hashamayim vayomer Elokim. Yikavu hamayim mitachas hashamayim amokam echad veseira'eh hayabasha. So that ma'amar was for the water that was until now covering the ground to become segregated, so that the surface of the earth will be revealed, will be open now, exposed. Kinim actually attacked the surface of the earth, so that it was not exposed anymore because the uppermost layer was no longer earth, but turned into kinim. That is keneged teira'eh hayabasha. Arov, wild animals, so that's day number 6, pasuk kafdalad, totse ha'aretz nefesh chay lemina, behema veremes v'chayser eretz lemina. So that's number 4, that's the animals corresponding to the mimer of the animals. Number 5 is dever, pestilence, a plague. Which of the mamorahs does that correspond to? So this is the most obscure of the connections because it actually relates to an obscurity within the creation of the luminaries. Light has already been created on essentially from day 1, Yihi Or, Vayom Elokim Yihi Or, and therefore on Yom Revi'i, Yihi Ma'oros Birkiah Shamayim, there exists a connection which is beyond our scope to discuss all of the elements, all of the levels of this connection, between the Ma'oros, between the luminaries, and plagues. Because the word Ma'oros itself, and Rashi comments on this, when it says Yihi Ma'oros, is written chaser. It's written without a vav. So actually the word could be written not so much Ma'oros as Me'eras. And the word Me'era means a plague. The Tova Ol of Me'era. And Rashi explains to a certain degree that depending on the, whether it's the position of the constellations, etc. and so forth, the Ma'oros have an impact on Me'eros. That's why there was the worry of Askarah, that terrible plague on Wednesday, Dafka, which is the day that the constellations and the luminaries were set in place. And therefore, Dever, which is plague, generally corresponds to the Me'eras of the Ma'oros. Shechin, boils. What is that? Well, Pasuk Kafvav says of Bereishis, Vayomer Elokim, Na'ase Adam Bitzalmeinu Kidmuseinu. The human form was created on the sixth day, says Maharal. Shechin, the boils, represent a disfigurement and a deformation of the human form. It attacks the tzura of the face, which is the physical representation of Tzelem Elokim. That's Vayomer Elokim, Na'ase Adam Bitzalmeinu. Number 7, Borod, hail. That corresponds, says Maharal, to on the second day where it says in Pasuk Vav, Yihi Rakia, there should be this firmament, the space, Vihi Mabdil Bein Mayim Lamayim. The Borod, Chazal tell us, the ice from which the hail came was from the upper waters, the Mayim Elyonim, and therefore it was a violation of the separation that existed through the Rakia. Because the Mayim Elyonim at this point overcame that barrier and came down in the form of hail. Number 8, Arbe, eats the vegetation, corresponds to Pasuk Yud Aleph, Totzei Haaretz Deshe, Esev Mazria, Zera, etc. All of that was wiped out by Arbe. Number 9, Choshech, corresponds to Yehi Or. And number 10, Makas Bechoros, says Maharal, the Bechoros is the first, right? Reishis Ono, and the first of the Ma'amoros is actually Bereishis Bara Elokim, as the Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Kaftes, Bereishis is also a Mimer. So this is something altogether overpowering, whereby when we say, as a matter of generality, that the Makos were in order to educate the Bnei Yisrael and through extension the entire world about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as creator and as ruler of the world, it is not only generally, but specifically step by step accompanying the Hasar Ma'amoros Shebahem Nivra Ha'olam. So that's the Maharal. And the truth is that there's another way to relate to the, in a sense, the rehash of the Asor Ma'amoros Shebahem Nivra Ha'olam. Because from a certain point of view, Shemos, Sefer Shemos, is also a Sefer of creation. And by that we mean, in Chumash Bereishis, it describes the creation of the world. Chumash Shemos describes the creation of the Jewish people and the giving of the Torah, which represent the final elements that the world needs in order to have been considered fully created. And that justifies creation when they come into being. And indeed, this is explicit in the words of Rashi at the very beginning of Bereishis. Bereishis, which is almost impossible to translate in a straight line because it does not mean in the beginning, for the simple reason that Rashi's is a construct form, and therefore Bereishis means in the beginning of, but then it doesn't say in the beginning of what. And that's why Rashi says, Ein ha-mikra zeh omer ela darsheni. This pasuk has to be darshaned. To give a pshat, a rendition of these words, is almost impossible. I mean, Rashi ensues to do so after that. But his first preference is for drash, which is amazing. Because that's almost Rashi's practically his first comment within the course of his commentary on the Torah al derech ha-pshat. Rashi says, Ani la basi ela liyashi pshuta shamikra. My job is to explain the pshat. Let's start at the beginning. Rashi says, Rashi, Ein ha-mikra zeh omer ela darsheni. You've got to darshan this. No other choice. So what does it mean? Bereishis, the base, no longer means in, but it means for, like Vayavod Yaakov, Berachel, for, and Bereishis means for the Reishis, for the sake of the Reishis. Who is the Reishis? What is the Reishis? Says Rashi, Bishvil HaTorah Shenikris Reishis, Ubishvil Yisrael Shenikru Reishis. They are the Reishis, which is amazing on many levels, because the Torah is using an expression of Reishis. It's referencing something in the very first word of the Chumash, one of which will not be written until the Navi Yirmiyahu says, Kodesh Yisrael Hashem Reishis Tvuoso. And the second will, until Shlomo HaMelech says, Hashem Kanoni Reishis Darko. So as references for the rest of Torah goes, it's almost impossible if this is the very first word of the Torah. But it all exists at the same time. And therefore, Derech Hadrash, Bereishis means for Yisrael and Mishvil Torah. So the entire creation is for Yisrael and Torah. And Yisrael and Torah come into being, or come into the world, in Chumash Shemos. And that, as we have mentioned on other occasions, is how the Netziv explains why the Bahag, the Balalochas Gedolos, Rabbi Shimon Kayora, from the time of the Gaonim, as he gave his names to the Chumashim, and he did not call them, as we do, conveniently, Bereishis and Shmos and Vayikra, he gave them characteristic names. He called Bereishis Chumash HaYitzira, and he called Vayikra Teras Kohanim, much like Chazal do, and Bamidbar is Chumash HaPekudim, and Devarim is Mishnah Torah, and Shmos he calls Chumash Sheni, which seems to lack the definition that the others have. Each one has a characteristic name. And Shemos, it's a second Chumash. But how is that a characteristic name? Says the Netziv, it is. Because it is the Chumash Sheni, it is second to Bereishis. It is the second Chumash of Yetzirah. Bereishis is Chumash HaYetzirah, and Shemos is Chumash Sheni. It's Sefer Yetzirah part 2. Because it is also discusses the Yetzirah of Bnei Yisrael and the entrance of Torah into the world. And therefore, from a certain point of view, we can look at the beginning of Chumash Shemos and perceive forces of creation analogous to and parallel to the beginning of Chumash Bereishis as the Jewish people are created, which is in a sense the final creation in the world. And the truth is, and this Rav Hyman Zatzal points out, brings us to consider two figures that we may not otherwise have put together. Two women, actually. Chava, who's the mother of everyone, and Yocheved, who's the mother of Moshe. Is there any connection between the two? Actually, there is immediately a connection between them in that they both gave birth at the age of 130. And that is referred to twice by the Medrash Rabbe in Chumash Bamidbar, when each of the Nesiim brings their korbanos, as we just read on Chanukah, and one of the kelim is shloshim u'me'ah mishkala, and on one of the days it says that corresponds to Chava when she gave birth to Sheis, and on the other day it corresponds to Moshe, Yocheved was 130 when she gave birth to Moshe, because they are coming in a sense as pillars of the world. Sheis is the pillar of all mankind, and Moshe is the pillar of Klal Yisrael. From a certain point of view, they're contrasted as well. Chava, unfortunately, for her great madrega, she is the wife of Adam HaRishon, but she is accredited with having brought death into the world, having been misled. and whatever complicated transaction happened by the Eitz Hadas, Hevia Misa Le'olam, and Yocheved, her job, her calling is to bring life into the world. She's a Mialedes, and she gives birth to Moshe. And moreover, if we compare once again the two snakes, and here Rabbeinu Bachya says that Paro the Nachash is a parallel to the Nachash in Gan Eden, and whereas Chava was swayed and persuaded by the Nachash in Gan Eden, Yocheved resists any persuasion or pressure on the part of Paro. And from that point of view, she moves away from Chava and becomes the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that brings us to our parsha. Because we have already beginning last week, but pronounced again in Parshas Va'era, is the partnership of Moshe and Aaron. They are the two agents through which the Geula will come. Originally, it was meant to be only Moshe. But Moshe demurs and resists until finally Aaron is also paired together with him. What is behind it? Many things, of course. Aaron is older. There's many, many factors. He's been a Navi. The Bnei Yisrael know him better. But there is another point. Aaron and Moshe have two very different midos. At the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Vav Amud Beis distinguishes between them, contrasts them. The midah of Moshe is midah sadin. Yiko hadin es ahar. Let it bore through a mountain. In other words, come what may. The truth must out. That was Moshe's approach. Aaron, on the other hand, of course, is famous for Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. He tried and work out a compromise, which is not exactly din, but it's more to find a meeting point between the two, to reach an understanding. And that remains, in a sense, two different midos from as high up as they go. The midah of Moshe is midah sadin, and of Aaron is midah sarachamim. And says Rav Hyman, it's such a classic question. Because there is an expression that we have in the Torah once in a while, hineni. And who said hineni? Well, twice, I think, in Chumash Bereishis, Avram says hineni at the Akedah, and Yosef says hineni in Parshas Vayeshev. And what does it mean? So it obviously doesn't mean merely, here I am. Because you're being called, that's where you are. But hineni means, I'm here, I'm ready. That Lashon Zrizus, I'm ready. And indeed they were. Hashem says to Avram, and Avram says, hineni, meaning whatever it is, I'll do it. And he does. He's prepared to go through with the Akedah. Hineni, he said he'd do it, and he does. Yosef, Yaakov calls Yosef, and Yosef says, hineni, whatever you want from me, I'll do. Yaakov sends him to his brothers, who almost kill him. But Yosef said, I'll do it. Whatever you ask of me, I'll do. So hineni represents an undertaking to respond to whatever it is that will be asked. And last week's parsha, Perek Gimel, by the snare, Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, Moshe. And Moshe says, hineni. What does hineni mean? What does it sound like it means? Whatever it is, I'll do it. Hashem says, go take the Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And Moshe starts arguing for 7 days. It's got to be the least energetic hineni ever. Hineni is meant to mean whatever it is. So it's that one thing, and Moshe says, I can't do that. So why'd you say hineni? I'm not sure what the alternative is, but it doesn't really sound like the other hinenis. So if Hyman says, in Pasuk Dalet of Shmos Perek Gimel, it says, Vayikra Elokim mitoch hasneh, Vayome Moshe Moshe, Vayome hineni. Now here we have to be very careful, but the Pasuk does say Hashem as Elohim called Moshe, Elohim, you know, is Midas Hadin. That means that Moshe is being called, something is about to happen, Al Pi Midas Hadin. And Moshe says, I'm ready. Whatever it is, that's me. I will do it. And two psukim later, the name changes. Vayom Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's midas harachamim. Hashem says, "I have rachmanus on the Bnei Yisrael." And at that point, in addition to everything else that's going on. It sounds like the Jewish people are not making the grade, certainly in terms of our, in light of our opening discussion, but aside from anything else, if they're meant to be there for 400 years, and certainly up to Midas HaDin they haven't been there for 400 years, if you're going to start reckoning it from earlier on, that itself is Midas HaRachamim. And therefore Moshe feels less and less connected and appropriate as the agent to bring the Bnei Yisrael out, up in Midas HaRachamim. And therefore he begins to back away. He is not the man for the job. And moreover, in the fullness of time, the response to all of this is that Aaron is paired with Moshe, because the extent to which the Jewish people need a dose of Rachamim in order to take them out, so the ones who take them out, there needs to be a partnership between the Rachamim of Aaron with the din of Moshe. And interestingly, this will take us forwards to consider two personalities that really mirror the relationship between Moshe and Aaron, and that is the relationship of Hillel and Shammai. They respond differently to very often to the very same question, because whether it's a Midas HaDin response or a Midas HaRachamim response, when someone comes along and says, "Tell me the whole Torah on one leg, because I have so many other things to do," so that's an unfair question. It's almost it's a ridiculing question. Shammai responds with Midas HaDin. That's shows him the door. He doesn't deserve to learn Torah. Hillel sits him down, and they begin to talk, and he tells him one thing, and then in the fullness of time, it's a different approach. And Hillel, as we know, was the one who exhorted Hevemi Tamidav Shal Aaron, Orev Shalom Vodev Shalom, because he is really after Aaron's heart, and Shammai is more like Moshe Rabbeinu. We've mentioned in the past, the Arizal says that when Moshe says in last week's Parsha, Lo ish tevar manochi, I'm not the person to speak. I'm not a man of words. Lo ish tevar manochi, but it means that I'm not the spokesman here. Lo ish tevar manochi, the sofei tevas of those four letters, spells the word Shammai, because that's what Moshe is indicating. He's Shammai. He's Midas HaDin. The response to that is to bring him Aaron. Aaron will be your spokesman. V'haya hu yeh lecha lepeh. Rosh Teva says the Arizal, Hey Yud Lamed Lamed, Hillel. The correct spelling of Hillel is with the Yud, by the way. And therefore, Aaron is the spokesman because he is the Midas HaRachamim. And in terms of our expectation and our understanding that the beginning of Chumash Shemos as a Sefer Yetzira Part 2, it's about the creation of the Bnei Yisrael. So how wonderful is it, says Rav Hyman, that to behold that the forces embodied by Moshe and Aaron correspond to the Rashi in the beginning of Chumash Bereishis, which says, Bereishis Bar Elokim, Mitchila Ala B'machshava Livras Olam B'midas HaDin, the original, the ideal, the thought was to create the world B'midas HaDin. But the world couldn't survive that way, and therefore, Shitevim B'midas HaRachamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu paired Rachamim, and even mentioned Rachamim first, B'yom HaSos Hashem Elokim Eretz V'Shamayim. Says Rav Hyman, that comes back again in Parshas Va'era, where originally, ideally, Bnei Yisrael should be redeemed through Midas HaDin. But it didn't work out! And therefore, Shitevim Midas HaRachamim, and the first time in this week's Parsha that Moshe and Aaron are mentioned together, Aaron is mentioned first. Who? Aaron and Moshe. Because Midas HaRachamim was put before Midas HaDin, and they are the forces of that go to create Bnei Yisrael, the channels through which the forces of Rachamim and Din redeem and forge Bnei Yisrael. And said against all of this, certainly this gives us added insight into the explanation of the Maharal, whereby the Eser Makos correspond to the Asar Mamor Shebehem Nivra HaOlam, because if what we are witnessing is yet another layer of Bria itself, that will take the ten-pronged enterprise of the Asar Mamoros, in this instance at the expense of Mitzrayim, in the form of the Eser Makos. We'll leave it over there for this evening. Meet again next week.